RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
We have been following quite closely, actually, the local body elections in Tauranga. Very close now. We've spoken to a range of people on that, on the ground, campaigning for council wards and for the mayoralty. Glenn Crowther was one of the early people involved in this that we had on RCR, and we thought it would be a good time, given that the election's now so close, to catch up with Glenn again and get his assessment, first of all, of his campaign. We know about the commissioners. We know about the debt. We know about the crazy projects and all of that. So, Glenn, it's good to have you back.
Yeah, good day, Paul. Great to be back on.
Okay, how's it been?
It's interesting. I think for a small city in New Zealand, it seems quite politically charged, really. It's the usual thing where you have, I think, a bunch of people who call them the elites, call them vested interests, whatever it is. They're pushing a particular agenda and they've given it the label progress. It seems to be a lot of the candidates are saying, we need progress, keep up good progress. Oh,
so they're using kind of the same word there.
It's a bit of a buzzword, and you know, I guess a nod to the progressive camp. And then there are others who take the complete opposite position, which is, you know, basically cut out everything, scrap the whole plan, throw everything, you know, in my view, maybe the baby out with the bathwater. And then there are some of us in the middle who are going, oh my goodness, this just seems a bit surreal. We just want to talk about the issues and about how to actually get Tauranga back on a good financial footing.
Yeah, we'll get into some of that in just a moment. We had Garth Matheson on, and I asked him if he thought the time period that the commissioners have been running the city, if it was a disaster, and he said, yes, it's been a disaster.
Heard him say that, and I wouldn't disagree when you're just on the financial grounds, really.
Yeah. The lack of prudent thinking is off the planet, it seems, given the eye-watering sums of debt and expenditure for projects that you can argue aren't even necessary.
This is the issue that, and it was interesting, Tauranga made another nationwide news story yesterday on Newsroom, where Jonathan Milne wrote about the funding crisis for councils around New Zealand. But Tauranga is being held up as the sort of benchmark or you know, the book picture of how things can go badly. And I think it is telling that the commissioners, you know, no doubt they had some strengths, but their weakness, and I think we covered this once before, Paul, was financial. They didn't have the financial acumen. And so they seem to have thought, if you just spend up big on everything, that'll fix the problem. And it does seem as simple as that, to be honest.
Yeah, I suppose people who are used to high incomes and a lot of disposable income and don't struggle on bills maybe get desensitized to the real world of the struggle sessions that people have to endure on a weekly basis. And maybe they disconnect from that, and there might be something in that.
Yeah, I think a good example for me was I was actually on the campaign trail, I guess you'd say. I'm talking to a woman who probably in her late 70s, early 80s, she was living mainly on National Super. And she said, well, I hope you're not going to put our rates up anymore, because if they go up another 20 or 30%, I'm just going to have to sell and I'll have to leave town. And interestingly, at the same time, I was having an online conversation with a candidate, a mayoral candidate, who was suggesting that I was scaremongering around rates increases, because I said, you know, the scale of the rates increases are going to be a lot more than 20 to 30% increase. They're going to more than double over the next decade under the commissioner's plan. And you know, this candidate was suggesting that I shouldn't scaremonger, that nobody would leave their home. But this woman, you know, I didn't have the heart to tell her, you know, she said 20 to 30% would push her out. I didn't have the heart to say, well, actually we're talking, you know, 2.2 times what you're paying now.
Oh man, that would have freaked her out.
Yeah. So I didn't want to, you know, hopefully we can change that. Hopefully.
This is an out there question, but you got to ask why things happen the way they do. Is there an effort to force people out in that way, do you think? Is that part of the thinking? It gets, when you use the word progressive, it can mean a lot of things. If you want to, you know, free up properties and kind of push the elderly people along, and you know they're on fixed income, superannuation, you know that you can put the squeeze on, and inevitably what you were just talking about will probably happen. Do you think any of that's going on?
I I'm open to all possibilities. I like to think, and I still genuinely think, that it's probably not that bad, hopefully. But the way that people talk about it sometimes, we had a former deputy mayor who's running for council this time, Larry Baldock, and I heard him in a council chamber saying, well, people can just, you know, sell up, or words to that effect. And the way they talk like that, you know, I don't, he doesn't seem like a, you know, horrible person who wishes ill on people, but they either don't think it through, or they genuinely think that it's not that big a deal. But when I talk to people, and, you know, I think about it in my own life, I think, gosh, if you have to sell up your house, it doesn't matter what else is going on in your life, that's a huge deal. And you don't want to be forced into that situation.
Well, you're being forced out of a community. You're being forced out of the community, aren't you? That you might have been living in for a lifetime.
I think it's just, you know, a lack of care about it, as opposed to a concerted agenda. But I guess it does play into the big picture, which is that we still have very high immigration rates, even though it has cooled off a bit, just heard in the recent update. But I think that pushes along pressure to build more houses, which in turn puts pressure on infrastructure, which puts pressure on rates. And it's all part of this big sort of what was called in Tauranga by the previous Labor government, the growth agenda. They wanted to push the growth agenda
progressive
along.
Growth agenda. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
All right. I want to get to some of what you've been doing on the actual campaign trail. I want to mention this first, because our audience across this, and that is this, you know, idea of 15-minute cities and the infrastructure that goes in to make those possible, to police them, the digital cage, as we've been calling it. And this is Mount Maunganui Lynx Avenue. I know Lynx Avenue well. They have new 15-minute city surveillance technology. So all visitors in the street will attract and find if they stay longer than they're supposed to. This is Big Brother watching. And for people who say, hey, come on, 15-minute cities is just convenience, the rest of what you're thinking is all tinfoil stuff. But this is it happening, isn't it? This is what we're talking about.
Well, this is a twist on it, I think. And it's, okay. I think it's, I mean, again, you'll have listeners who think I'm just being naive, but I am still thinking sort of cock up rather than conspiracy.
Yeah.
But having said that, I mean, it's just completely, you know, blind by Tauranga City Council that they have implemented literally a 15-minute time zone on the street. But there's a bit of history behind it. So what happened was close to a decade ago some local residents were concerned about their kids getting to and from school safely. So like a lot of things, it all starts off innocently enough. Then they had all sorts of ideas, and they put in a cycle lane basically just to serve the intermediate school on the street. And then they found the street that they stuck in a whole lot more buses along the street. And so the parents were quite concerned that little Johnny or Mary, who was on the cycle lane on the side next to the footpath, might, you know, basically lose balance and go under a bus.
Yep.
So that's a genuine set of issues. And up to then, you know, that was with councillors in charge.
Wait on, Glenn. Did no one think that through? Come on. If it was all about safety and being kind and all of that, the last thing you want to do is put kids next to buses within the distance of falling off and going under the frickin' wheels.
That's why I'm in the cock-up camp, because I think that the buses are run by the regional council. The city council built the cycleway. Then the city council kind of realised the buses were going down their street. And at one point they were talking about building a wall along the side of the footpath / cycleway, shared path. And then some residents pointed out where would they put their rubbish bins and recycling bins and, you know, just the practical reality of living in a city. So after a bit of toing and froing, they set up a community liaison group. And then the councillors were turfed out, and along came the commissioners. Now, the community liaison group was a good mix of people from the community. I know some of them, they're thoughtful people, and they were coming up with various ideas, such as not running as many buses down there, and looking at other options to do little tweaks on the road so that the morning peak traffic could still get through. But potentially it could be like become a one-way at peak time, for example. There were various ideas thrown around, but they were still in the middle of working this out. And the commissioners basically said they had, I believe it was less than 24 hours notice to come along and attend a briefing, because the commissioners had made a decision about what would happen. And next thing they knew, the street was closed to motor vehicles other than buses and service vehicles, or I think it was some other category like that. So that was where it was. I think it was 2021 we're talking about now. 2022, there was all sorts of pushback. There were thousands of people had signed a petition. It was incredibly unpopular, but more importantly, it's the usual kind of unintended consequences of this, which meant that you had massive congestion on some other routes because people had to go somewhere, so they didn't go down the street. And meanwhile, we had the most expensive roading project, I'm told, in Australasia, the Bay Fair to Bay Park, 1.5 km or so of highway.
How much did it cost?
We haven't got the final number, but it's 300 and something million for a kilometre and a half, makes the transmission gully look pretty cheap. And so all this was going on in this one little area of suburbia, really, with the highway through it. And the question is, why this one street? Why did they close this when in my own suburb, in Otamortai, there is a street right near a college and an intermediate school and a primary school, which has a worse safety record, which has no cycleway, which has frequent buses, and they took a completely different approach there. And I think the allegation from a number of people was that this was a trial that could be set a precedent for, and of course now into that mix, as a sort of a parting gesture from the commissioners, they've issued a letter to local residents which says that today we are thrilled to introduce a trial of innovative technology and procedures that will increase access to the Lynx Avenue from 1st of July. And that explains a very, very complex set of procedures of how you can avoid getting a fine or needing an exemption to be able to drive through there.
What's wrong with riding on the footpath? I used to do it. There are plenty of footpaths already there. Not many people walk these days. Just use the footpath.
Well, I would say on that one that if you've observed, certainly in Tauranga, the intermediate schools in particular, and this is an intermediate, there are a lot of people walk. So I would say, in general terms, having stood out on the roadside for most mornings from 6:30 till 9 o'clock in the morning and looking at people heading towards this CBD in Tauranga, I can tell you most people go in a vehicle. There are quite a few cyclists from the suburb that I live in, but one day there were 13 pedestrians over a 2.5 period. Another day there were less than 10. So I agree with you in general in terms of people walking in Tauranga, at least to work in the CBD. But around schools, I think is a genuine issue. But I think there are better ways of doing it. And the real kicker was that the commissioners closed the street 24/7. To traffic, and they did it on the grounds of protecting children's safety.
Yeah, so, but they're not up at 3 in the morning.
Exactly. It was just, I mean, it was so incredible that I think people were kind of waiting for the punchline, instead of it never came. They were like, well why? What's so dangerous at 3 o'clock in the morning about a car going down an empty street? Now, having said that, there is this, presumably, and I haven't gone into the details of this, I just saw the letter and was just a bit gobsmacked, which is I think what you saw on a post that I'd done. But I mean, there must be some way of monitoring that with, scanning number plates and things that sort of more accurately than they did before. Exactly.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone wants
their number plate scan.
You know, if you get real human beings on the street, I got no problem with observing, like parking people and stuff. That's okay. But it's the invasiveness of the technology that,
absolutely.
And once you kind of got your head around it and know how it works in the real world, then you can apply it even more. Okay. On the campaign trail, I'm looking at one of your, I guess it's a flyer, and you're standing Matua Automotor. I used to live in Matua. And you're giving rates comparisons. Do you want to explain those a bit? Because the numbers are quite alarming, actually, especially what people could be paying per week I'm looking at. And I'm thinking that's quite a bit every week, 52 weeks a year for your rates.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and this is a big issue across the country where people are talking about rates increases, but Tauranga has, out of all the cities around New Zealand, it has the highest residential rates, not the highest rates overall, because for years we didn't charge sort of more rates for commercial and industrial users. That's been changed, but for a long time our overall rates take was lower because especially places like Wellington charged an awful lot on their commercial ratepayers. But in Tauranga, the residential ratepayers have been hit hard for a long time, and other than small councils, which some of your listeners may have heard of, like I think Carterton and South Wairarapa and some of those kind of councils that are really struggling financially, but in terms of cities, Tauranga is worse off with the residential ratepayer already. Now, the 10-year plan that got signed off has some big rates increases in store. And one of the contentious issues in this campaign, which I didn't think would be that contentious, was when people like myself started quoting the council's own numbers in the long-term plan and said there will be a 164% increase in rates. That means 2.64 times what they are now by 2034. And that just seemed a straight projection that councils all around New Zealand do in their plans, and we were able to compare it with other cities. We were able to compare the debt, and as listeners may have heard, if they heard Garth Matheson interviewed, one of the other Tauranga candidates, he pointed out the debt will triple to $3 billion, and these rates will go up by 2.64 times. Now, candidates started pushing back and saying, you're scaremongering, you know, this is ridiculous. So some of us decided to look deeper into the numbers. Well, I guess we already had, but started to promote the more detailed numbers, which showed that once you allow for the growth in the number of properties and, there are levies which you have to account for, and how much goes onto the residential and how much on commercial ratepayers, and all gets a little bit technical. But at the end of the day, you can still say that on average, at least a 2.2 times increase in the rates that people are paying now on their property. So if at the moment the average rates is around sort of the, between $3,000 to $4,000, then they will end up at the end of a decade going to $6,600 to $8,800. But there are a lot of people in my suburb who are on, their properties, they're paying rates of $4,000 just to the city council, plus Tauranga has separate water rates, and they're averaging around $500, and they're potentially set to double as well. And then you have regional council rates, which will be projected to be on average around $1,000 by the end of the decade, and you are talking significantly over $10,000, which is more than $200 per week for those kind of average properties in the suburb in which I'm standing.
Presumably you've distributed this. Have you had reactions
these numbers? The everyday person, the people, I literally walked around delivering flyers and, bumping into people and went and visited local shops and so on. I don't think I've had anyone who's I've had one person who sort of said he didn't mind what the rates were. Like that was a side issue.
Oh, really?
Okay. So which is fine. I mean, he was probably wasn't struggling financially by the sound of it.
Yeah.
There are some people who say I'll be fine. Like I have no worries about it for myself, but I don't like what these rates increases are going to do for the city. I always think that's quite quite good to know that people care about others. But there are certainly a lot of people I meet who, even though they say they're not, you know, they've got their own house, they've got a job, they're going along sort of okay, but they're just saying this could be the straw that breaks the camel's back. And yet there are other candidates who have pushed back incredibly strongly on this. And perhaps more interestingly, that there was a mayoral, I attended a mayoral candidates meeting that was run by the Papamoa Residents and Ratepayers Association. And they asked a number of questions of these mayoral candidates. And what was interesting is there was no support. Well, one candidate, I think, supported the rates increases. And there was strong support that the land developers should pay more for the expensive growth infrastructure that ends up pushing up the rates. So that seemed quite straightforward. But then they asked, do you support this long-term plan, and would you actually revise the plan? And it's at that point where one or two of the leading candidates got a little bit less clear. And I think this is one of the big issues we've got, is that if you want to avoid having these huge rates increases, something's got to give. And there's a lot of sort of magic talk in this election campaign where people seem to be saying, no, we're not going to have these big rates increases. But even if we were to, we'll just do something and we'll make sure that doesn't happen.
Do something
and you
magical.
Ask them, yeah, I've never heard anyone come up with a plan except for people like myself who are saying you have to actually ditch some things that are in the plan that are costing this big money. Otherwise, it just won't add up.
Yeah, you get a hat, a top hat, and a little wand and a little black cloth, and you wind the wand around the top, you pull it off, and there's a rabbit in it. Oh, gosh. Okay. Yeah, I'd vote for that. So you've been on the trail just to wind up. You've been on the trail. How are you finding it? What's people's reaction to you? How are you feeling? Are you feeling confident? You don't know? Give us an idea of where you feel you're at in the campaign.
Because
we're real close now. It's really closing in. What's the date? 20th, isn't it?
Yeah, the 20th is the cutoff. And we have, I'm not sure what other councils around the country do nowadays, but we have a three-week campaign of voting where you can drop off your voting papers at the local supermarket or mail them. And I think it just seems almost a bit too drawn out. It's hard to know where I'm at. I think one of my frustrations is I'm the kind of candidate who likes to talk about the issues, and I would sort of stand up and back myself in terms of understanding of what the council's plans are and policies and everything. So I like the idea of having debates or meetings and talking to people, but there's been virtually none of that. There've been two meetings. One was very scripted. The other one was very limited opportunities to talk. We've got 14 candidates for one position in my ward. So apart from the lack of meetings, even when you have the meeting, you don't have much time. So I've relied really on going out, and I didn't want to door knock and bug people that way. But if I see people as I'm delivering flyers, or if I go to shops and things, I've talked to people and the response has always been good. I've gone to some community meetings, gone along to the pub, met with some people, etc. And I think I'd back myself, if I could get the word out, I'd back myself to do okay. But in terms of, you know, what will happen. I think it's a real lottery. And I've talked to mayoral candidates, including the, you know, the big name candidates in Tauranga, and none of them have a clue really. Although I have heard there's a secret poll that's taken place and nobody seems to know who's done it. And it's all a bit of a mystery. But the allegation is that it's, again, these property developers that you've heard Garth and myself talk about, where they're keeping an eye on proceedings. So I can't say whether that's true because, but I have heard it's just there's a result that's come out in the last couple of days.
Okay. And we've heard from yourself, John Robson, Garth Matheson. Common thread is that that local media, how do I put it, could have done a better job up till now. Is that still the case? Because that surely is, you know, crucial for information at a time like this, particularly in a place like Tauranga.
Yeah, well, we're possibly one of the worst served of the now, you know, sort of larger cities, because you compare to Dunedin, where there's the history of ODT, the Otago Daily Times, and private radio or whatever, you know, the different things.
4XO. Yeah,
yes, but also I was thinking that, like, they have some access radio and thing, you know, and so there's possibilities there where I'm not sure if they still have a local TV channel. In Tauranga, there's never been, we've never been big enough to have all those things, so we've always relied on.
Hey, I used to be on Radio BOP.
Well, I know that, but I mean news, you know.
I remember having candidates for local and, you know, national elections. I remember Winston Peters coming in when he was.
Oh, yeah, but that was back in the heyday.
I remember Rob Muldoon coming in. I had to deliver him a cup of coffee in the studio.
But, you know, that's long gone on. This is just Formula music stations now, unfortunately. But the point being, we've always relied a lot on the Bay of Plenty Times. And when it became part of the NZME group, then that sort of, you know, change things a little bit. And then now they've actually absorbed the only other alternative, which was Sun Media has a an online channel as well, Sun Live. So now most stories, there's very few news stories every day. Most of them are just about accidents or, you know, press releases. And so it's the classic thing where we rely on Reality Check Radio. And
I think we've probably done the most. My assessment is, could be missing something, Tauranga election coverage of anyone by far.
By far, yeah. I totally agree. I would say there has been as much coverage in the Bay of Plenty Times, but in terms of the quality and analysis of it, I think that's another matter. And I think my concern is not that what they've printed is wrong, but that it doesn't give an accurate understanding of what the issues are.
Well, I think John Robson mentioned quite a big spend that the Tauranga City Council and probably some of the other councils have with Bay of Plenty Times in the millions. You don't want to rock that boat.
Mm. And I think the big question is, you know, as we keep moving further into this direction, is how do you actually get, you know, the issues discussed in a way that everyone can access them. And I know there's you know, reasonable listenership now with RCR, but I think it's still
we're only part of the picture. You know,
that's only part, and you're the only channel that's actually doing this. And I think that's what I've noticed is missing in this campaign. So I'm not feeling confident about a good result. I'm hopeful. I've walked the streets in Ultimortai and had people say, "Hey, you're the guy who was on RCR."
Oh, that's
and
good.
So they're out there, and it's fantastic. But it is a worry that, you know, for every person like that, there's probably a few who haven't heard what's going on.
I'm not throwing out an endorsement to you or the other people that we've talked to, though I do think what you say is sensible and logical, makes sense. And you're not the only one who says it. So there's a lot of data points there. But folks, people of Tauranga, share the replays. That's what you can do. Share the replays. And that's a force multiplying effect. It really is. So I'd say that. Mm. All right. Well, Glenn, get ready. we're ranging in. And I don't know if we'll chat before the 20th, but, you know, the time after that, I'm sure we will. I'll be fascinated to see how you do. And we'll catch up then. Okay.
Yep, thank you, Paul. And I would say for the people listening, the big issue is not even whether individuals like myself or Garth or John get on. If the issue is, will we get a council that's actually going to deliver what the community wants? And I think that's what I'm really crossing my fingers for. So see how we go.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.